Welcome to Season 7 of the Follow MLE Podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back to Season 7, Episode 2. I am excited you're here because you are in for a real treat. We're joined by truly an extraordinary man. Ty Bennett joined us on the show this week. He's a world-renowned speaker, best-selling author, entrepreneur, husband, and a father to four young children. And there's just so much to learn from Ty and his experience traveling the globe. And his whole approach around partnership is the new leadership, really getting in the trenches and being more of partners with your people than the other way around or some hierarchical approach. Some of my favorite quotes that came out of the discussion were, "What people want from their leader is commitment. Motivation is important, but it's overrated." He said, "The impact you have on other people is one of the greatest rewards anybody can have." He said, "Your ability to lead, to connect, to win people over is one of the most important skill sets you can develop." Think about that. Your ability to lead, to connect, to win people over is one of the most important skill sets you can develop as a professional. Because you'll always have a job if you're a good leader. It's so true. So open your Evernote app and get ready to input some notes that will make a big impact on your career and life. So without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with the one and only Ty Bennett. Just a quick housekeeping item. This podcast is brought to you by LearnLoft. Our purpose is to teach every professional how to add value to their organization in the world. Find out how we can help your organization or you individually at LearnLoft.com. Ty Bennett, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Well, as I looked at your bio and I see entrepreneur, founder of a $20 million plus business, beginning at the age of 21, professional speaker, author, husband, father to four, there's really so much I want to cover with you, so I want to really cover it in parts, okay?
Okay.
I want to start with your journey to give an essence of a man seemingly from the outside that really lives out what most people would consider just a storybook life. Give us a little bit of sense of your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Well, you know, I think everybody's perspective of a storybook is probably a little bit different. I really love my life. I enjoy what I do, but that doesn't mean it's not without its challenges, right? I grew up in Colorado. Great parents, great family. Always been a very entrepreneurial kind of person. I chose to study entrepreneurship in college because I figured that was the route I was going to go. I love working with people. I love the sales process. I love leadership. And that's always something that's fascinated me. So when I was 21, my brother Scott and I started a business together. He was, you know, older and wiser at the ripe old age of 22. You know, we were young, naive entrepreneurs, but we had some great mentors. We jumped in and we were willing to work extremely hard and willing to learn and grow and fail every day, which I think is so vital. You know, I'd love to tell you that business took off like a rocket, but it took some time. You know, we had our ups and downs, and long story short of that, we built that to about a $20 to $25 million business annually. And in the process of that, I did a lot of speaking and training for our sales team, and through that found that was really my passion, what I truly love to do. And so I started a speaking and training company called Leadership Inc. about 6 years ago. And I've written 4 books, and I now get a chance to travel all around the world and give keynote speeches to different sales and leadership organizations. So I speak about 100 times a year, so I'm on the road quite a bit, and get a chance to work with some amazing companies. You know, I just think of the last couple of weeks, I spoke for USAA in San Antonio, awesome group. I'm speaking next week for Berkshire Hathaway. I mean, just all sorts of different companies and different industries, and I get a chance to share some ideas and come in and be part of their events. And to me, it's a total dream. It's a passion. I love what I'm doing.
Did you always know, Ty, that your passion would end up being around helping other people become the best version of themselves, or did that grow as you began speaking in your organization in your early 20s?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, one thing that really shaped my life, in high school, I was a basketball player, and my junior year, I blew out my knee playing cross country or running cross country. And so I didn't end up playing basketball my junior or senior year. But instead, I got involved in a business program called DECA. And it's a great leadership business program for high school and college students. But in that, I got really involved in the leadership. I was the president of our chapter. I was the vice president of Colorado. And I had a chance to do some speaking and leadership side to that. And so there was an element of that that I really fell in love with. But then in building our business, what became the passion for me was in the development side, helping our people improve, seeing our sales team grow and succeed. I mean, that became more and more evident to me that that's where I felt like my gifts were and where my passion was and where I found the most fulfillment. And so I think a little bit of both.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, one of my favorite questions to ask actually happens before we ever even do the interview. I ask someone on your team or someone that knows you really well to describe you in a sentence. And okay. After hearing you just say those things that you're passionate about and all the things that you love about speaking and getting involved with, I wanted to read you a quote from someone that knows you well. It says, okay. Ty Bennett is an ambitious entrepreneur, talented orator, fun-loving family man with a passion for people and relationships and life. I think it goes along really well with what your passion was as you started to discover leadership and speaking. How does that make you feel to hear that?
Well, I love it. I'd love to know that. but yeah, I agree. I think I'm driven by people. I love connecting with people. I love the potential that people have in them. I think we all have incredible potential. And I think I view my role in what I do is I get a chance to influence the influencers, and you know, I get a chance to be with so many leaders and influencers in so many different industries, and I take that responsibility very seriously, because if I can cause them to approach their organization with a little bit more empathy, with a little bit more enthusiasm, if I can cause them to lead in a little bit more effective way, I think the ripple effect of that is huge. And so, yeah, I definitely am passionate about people and the ability to connect and make an impact.
It's an important characteristic, I don't think, even just for a speaker, though, right? I mean, in many
no,
ways,
for sure.
The more people holistically that have that mentality, the better place the world will be, and certainly our companies will be, right?
For sure. Every once in a while, I'll have a leader, a manager, somebody in one of my sessions that will – once or twice I've had somebody say, well, what do you do if you just don't like people? And I'm like, I don't know where to start with that one, to be honest. I think sometimes we all have our moments, right? But at the fundamental level, leadership begins and ends with people. So I think that's got to be a passion for us if we want to lead effectively, if we want to ultimately have great relationships, I mean, whether it's personal or professional.
Well, you kind of segue into the second part of the conversation, the second part of the three that I wanted to have, and that is around leadership. And you're probably best known for your work around partnership as the new leadership at this point. For someone that doesn't know what partnership is the new leadership, what exactly is it? How do you describe it to people?
Well, I think the old adages of leadership have changed. I think, you know, the old adage would say that leadership was based on title, position, and authority, right? I mean, you hold the position of leadership and that puts you in charge. And ultimately in our world today, people don't follow titles, they follow people. I have an interesting look at organizations, and I find it interesting to be able to come in as an outsider and to see who truly has influence within an organization, and is not always the person who holds the greatest title. And so as I've studied leadership over the last several years and really focused in on the idea that what leaders want from their people is they want commitment, right? We want our people to show up, to do a great job, to be committed. But what drives commitment more than anything else is the approach of the leader. People are committed to people. And so I believe that partnership is the new leadership. What I mean by that, it's not losing sight of roles, or I'm not trying to change organizational structure. It's the approach of leaders. It's the the relationships you build with your people. It's how you communicate with them in a conversational way. It's involving them and giving them a voice and a sense of ownership. It's being able to lock arms with them to truly make them better people, better leaders, better at their job, as opposed to just approaching leadership from a motivational standpoint. So I think the best leaders, the most effective, the most relevant, the most influential leaders in today's world really approach leadership from a partnership standpoint. And so I that's the message that quite often I'm sharing with leaders in different organizations today, based off of the book I wrote by the same title. And I think it resonates. I think a lot of people approach it in several areas like that, but maybe haven't classified it the same way that I have as a partnership. But I think it gives a structure and a clear model to follow. And I think that's why it resonates well.
Well, I had to further your point that I think it resonates well and how applicable it is in the real world. I had a meeting this morning about a young lady who's looking to make a career adjustment. And she spent 5 or 6 years in the corporate world right out of college, and she just couldn't get past the fact that there was this structured environment of people kind of telling her what to do without reciprocating it the other direction. It was just like a top-down approach to leadership, and it just bore such a weight on her life that she finally just decided to make a change. And I think it just furthers your point of, in today's world, that idea of what would her experience have been like, or how different would much she more would she have given to that company if her relationship was more of a partnership with her direct manager versus the top-down, push-down approach to leadership, as you were just suggesting.
Well, I think most people have probably heard the saying that people join companies, but they leave bosses, right? And that's kind of a funny saying, but statistically, it actually bears out. Most people who leave have similar experiences like what you're describing with this young woman, and that's unfortunate, right? The approach of the leader has so much impact and direct effect in terms of the effectiveness, the engagement, the commitment of their people. And so I think as leaders, we've got to change our approach. We've got to step up a little bit, and we've got to become better.
Yeah. I saw you tell a story about High Point University. And so, certainly because I'm in North Carolina, I connected with it. Not many people know of High Point. Tell that story about High Point and kind of this idea of partnership as a new leadership in the real world.
Yeah, so High Point's amazing, and you're right. Most people probably have never heard of High Point University. It's based in High Point, North Carolina. Dr. Nito Cobain is the president there. He wrote the foreword to my book, and he's an example I use quite often throughout the book because what he's created there is just total transformation. And in a place where education, transformation is not a thing. it doesn't happen that often. So High Point had been in existence for 71 years, small little liberal arts school based in kind of the furniture capital of the U.S., right, in High Point. And in 2005, Dr. Nito Cobain was put in as president. He did his undergrad there. He raised his family in High Point, but his business took him all around the world. I mean, incredible pedigrees, written books. He started a bank. He sold to BB&T. He's on the board of BB&T Bank. He's the chairman of the Great Harvest Bread Company. He's on the board of Lazy Boy Furniture, several others. We could go on, right? So he takes the oath literally as he's sworn in as the president. As he finishes, he pulls out his checkbook, he writes out a $1 million check, and he hands it to the dean. And the dean goes, "What are you doing?" and he goes, "This is a donation to the school." And he goes, "I get that. One, we've never received a check this big in our history. And two, you don't make this much money as the president." And he goes, "Here's the thing." He goes, "One of my roles is to raise money for the school, and I can't ask people to donate at that level if I haven't myself." So he starts with example, right? Within 24 hours, he has over 17 checks for more than $1 million. He's raised in the last 11 years almost $750 million for the school. The transformation has been incredible. They've grown the student population from 1,500 to 5,000. They've expanded the campus by more than 150 acres. They've built 71 buildings on this campus. I mean, I don't know if you've ever toured this campus. I heard about this, and the truth is, I hope that his leadership lived up to the story. That's what I hope.
Right. Those are always dangerous, right?
Yeah. I kind of went, you know what? I want to go see it. You know, let's see. Because maybe there's something weird going on. I don't know. So through some mutual friends, I connected with Nino. He was very gracious. Said, you know what? Yeah, come visit, spend the day with me. You know, I'll tour you around, give you access to whoever you want. You can interview me. Let's do it. And I mean, you walk around this campus and it's like Disney World. You cannot find a piece of trash on the ground, like literally at all. And I'm walking around and I saw college kids pick up trash and throw it away that they found, you know, just here, there. It's like a culture that they've created. And I'm walking around with Nito, and literally every student we pass, they're like, Nito, hey, Nito, how are you? And I'm like, what in the world? I mean, I don't know where you went to school, but where I went to school, I don't know if I could have told you who the president of the university was, you know? Nito teaches a class for every incoming freshman on skills to be successful in college. And then he teaches a class for every outgoing senior on skills to be successful in life. He partners with them in a unique way, but it's not just that, but the way that he partners with his leadership team and the engagement and commitment that they have, it's a fascinating example. I mean, we could flush it out a whole lot more than that in terms of what he does, but the transformation to me is just, it's exactly what partnership, the partner-based leadership approach creates. And I see that not just in, you know, High Point, it's a great example, but in so many other businesses, and what it starts with is the way that the leader approaches it, the way they partner with their people. And because of that, the people take ownership and it changes organizations.
Well, I don't think there's a better answer for why leadership is so important than that story. It's an amazing story. And that's hard to do in higher ed. I mean, it's hard to do anywhere, much less higher ed.
Yeah, it's just so slow moving, and you know, he just had such a different approach to it, but it's been amazingly impactful.
And that's an amazing example for, you know, kind of a president CEO level. I want to go down a level, Ty, right?
Okay.
For a young professional that isn't a CEO, that doesn't manage a large team or isn't in a big time leadership role in an organization yet, why should they care about leadership?
Well, so let's take, you know, middle management. You just got put into this new position where you have, you know, your same functionality. You know, take, for example, you're working at a bank. So you still have the same role that you've been working there, but now you're in charge of four or five people, right? You've got this small team that kind of reports to you, and you've got to report to somebody on overall the effectiveness of the team. So it goes beyond you for the first time. And you probably got this role because you've been effective in what you're doing, right? You're good to work with. You're doing a good job. Well, now you get to be put in a position where you have the opportunity to really impact the overall approach, the commitment level of those people. And you can make such a big difference in terms of how committed, how engaged, and how effective those people are. Let me just give you one simple idea. I have people call my company all the time and they say, you know what, we want Ty to come and motivate our people, right? I mean, that's a pretty normal thing. I get kind of classified as that motivational speaker, or I finish a session and we have these leaders who come up to me and they say, you know what, Ty, we want you to, I mean, just what did you do to motivate our people, like my team? How do I get them motivated? They're just not as motivated as I want them to. And my response is always, motivation is important, but it's overrated. Okay, so here's what I mean by that. If you were to take any goal that you have, right? So you have a goal to lose weight, you have a goal to have more committed people, it doesn't matter. You have to factor in two things. There's motivating factors that move you towards that goal, and there's obstacles or inhibitors that keep you from that goal. Which is more important? And the truth of the matter is, most of the time as leaders, we focus on the motivation, but removing the obstacles and the inhibitors, helping our people do their job well, and knowing what those sticking points, what's stopping them. Maybe it's a systemic thing. Maybe the processes or things that we're doing are struggling, or maybe it's individual and they have a fear or lack of skill or knowledge or something. But if we actually partner with our people, if we lock arms with them, if we remove the walls that are in front of them and we help them be really good at their job, that is the ultimate motivation. They will show up and do their job every day because they're extremely good at it, right? But it takes a leader going to another level to partner with their people to figure out what those things are, because most of the time we just sit back and we try and just cheerlead, right? We motivate our people, but we're running them into a wall. And we're just like, you know what, run faster. And there's still a wall, and they keep hitting the wall, right? So this is just one simple idea, but I think partner leaders, if we were to grab on and we were to help our people truly become better at what they do, which takes a commitment of partnership. It takes you locking arms with your people to really get into the trenches and figure out what's working and what's not and how do we remove those obstacles. That's the kind of approach that I'm talking about. That's where leadership becomes extremely effective. So going back to your question, why would they do that? Well, let's take it from a personal ambition standpoint. The more effective you are at middle management, the more opportunity you're going to have, right, moving up. Secondly, let's take it from a goodness standpoint. The more impact you can have on other people, that is one of the greatest rewards you could ever have. I mean, to know that you have helped people move forward, to help them succeed, to help them really be effective in what they do, intrinsically, it's one of the most rewarding feelings that we could have. But I will promise you this, if you become an extremely effective leader, you would never have any problem finding a job somewhere. I mean, that's just how it works, right? I mean, you become known for that. You have advocates that would recommend you, would hire you, would be your total advocate in who you are. And so I think your leadership skills, regardless of your chosen profession or industry, your ability to lead, to connect, to win people over is one of the most important skill sets that you can develop.
Not to mention, as technology changes, as jobs change, as functions change, you know, the ability to lead others will never go away.
No.
You know, it just never will. I mean, it might be different in the future. Technology might change things, but it's a skill that will be timeless.
I think technology just facilitates it, right? I mean, you and I are having this conversation via technology that, you know, years ago we would have to be together sitting down to be able to do this interview. All it's doing is facilitating connection. Mm-hmm. You know, that using the technology doesn't change the skill set or the importance of things. In fact, I think the more high tech we become, the more high touch we need to become. Right. I think there's an onus on being able to connect with people that becomes even more important.
Brilliant point. Just a brilliant point. And I think that the other real takeaway here is this idea of, you know, as we call them, kind of mouse traps that you just mentioned earlier, which is, you know, removing these barriers instead of it's a fascinating point to consider. And I want to go back to it really fast because it's a really unique position around the difference in motivation and then removing things. What are some things that you've seen work really well that leaders do to identify what those mouse traps are?
Well, that's a great question. So a couple of things. One, we have to be the kind of leaders that are accessible and approachable to our people, that give our people a voice. I'll give you a great example. Last week, I was in San Antonio, Texas. I was speaking for USAA, great company, great organization. I was speaking for the mortgage department. 3 years ago, they hired a new president to be in charge of that division of the company. His name is Winston. I honestly can't remember his last name. The reason I remember his name is Winston is because one of the first things he established is 4 days a week when he's in the office, he does what he calls lunch with Winstons. He has 20 people that he invites to lunch. And the point of that lunch is for him to say, I want to hear from you what's working, what's not. Give me feedback. What do we need to change? And at first, everybody kind of was hesitant, like, okay, this is great, you know. But as soon as he started to make those changes, they were like, oh, he's actually listening, right? He spoke right before me last Tuesday. As he was on stage, he said, 3 years ago, we established these Lunch with Winstons. We've identified 533 actionable items to change based off of your feedback. Thank you for that. it helps us figure out what's not working and how to be better. He said 362 of those have been changed and the others are in process. And I mean, how cool is that?
That's
right?
Awesome.
I mean, and they can be the littlest things. He said, for example, one thing we didn't realize is in the software, it says something to the effect of system for veteran affairs. Well, on the form, they had to manually change it every time to say veterans affairs, just to add the S. Well, that's just stupid, right? Why would they spend a minute every time they're filling out the form to add an S? Why not just fix the form? I mean, just little things, right? But so I think giving your people a voice, because typically those who are facing the problems, they're the ones who are going to have the best insight, right? Secondarily, I think we need to get down into the trenches with our people to see what they go through on a daily basis. Another client of mine, Delta Airlines, I had a chance to speak for all of the managers of all the airports around the world. And these managers, some are over the sky lounge, some are what they call above wing and below wing. And one of their, I connected with all the groups from Salt Lake City because that's where I'm based out of. I fly out of Salt Lake quite a bit. Well, the manager who's below wing, which means all the guys that are loading the baggage, who are taking care of the plane, right? He starts his shift every morning, the first plane out, he is down there loading bags. He's doing the shift with his people. And then he goes and starts his normal day as the leader. Why does he do that? To get in the trenches, to see what they're facing every day, and to see what's working and what's not. Not only does that gain the respect of his people, but it gives him a unique insight. So I think that as leaders, if we just spend a little bit of time to give our people a voice, to see the world from their perspective, we gain so much insight on what's not working and what's stopping them to use your word, to find those mousetraps, right? How do we remove those inhibitors? Well, we have to identify them first.
Yeah, they're just some awesome lessons there. And I'll probably never forget Winston's name now either.
Yeah, I've got to look up his last name. I'm sorry. But
no,
but
no,
yeah,
I mean, even
Lunch
just
with Winston's,
lunch with
I was
Winston.
Like, yeah, it's perfect.
It's a cool idea. It's things like that I think people can apply. Let's move into the last segment, which I tend to think of is typically a little more lighthearted, but it's important. I very much believe in the idea that don't tell me you're a good leader at work if you're not a good leader at home. So let's talk about leading outside of the professional world. You have four kids ranging from what, 11 to 3 or 10 to 3. Active in your church, travel 100 days a year, produce new content and blogs and writing on a regular basis. How do you balance it all?
I don't know. that's a constant daily struggle, right? I struggle to put formulas to it personally because everybody's situation is different, right? My schedule's weird. I'm gone a lot, but when I'm home, I've arranged my life so that I can be home. You know, like yesterday, I had a phone call for 30 minutes with a client that I'm speaking for next month. That's it. The rest of the day, my wife and I were doing stuff around the house. We had stuff with our kids, you know. Like, so I think everybody has to find their balance. I think it comes down to priorities. I think you have to prioritize things that are important. And from a scheduling standpoint, that becomes vitally important. I think, you know, going along those lines, I think leadership is most demonstrated in the home. Principles that I talk about all the time, you know, I talk about how leadership is individual. Well, if I'm going to preach that, I need to live it. So with my kids, I know that all four of them are very different. I need to spend the time with each of them. So monthly, I have an individual date with each of my kids where we get to go do different things where it's just them and me. And my wife does the same thing. Monthly, I have an individual interview with my kids. Not that there's, you know, any huge things that I'm asking them, but more than anything else, I want to establish an open dialogue, right? I want to know, be able to talk about anything and everything and be able to have them know that I'm there and willing to have those conversations on a regular basis. So I don't know. I think there's so many little pieces to it, but to me, I think prioritizing that is extremely important. And I think the application of that within your family is extremely important. And ultimately, you know, the ultimate partnership in my mind is, you know, with my wife and I and making our family work and prioritizing all those things. And so I don't know that I have the, you know, perfect formula
it's just an interesting
dynamic. We're working at it for sure.
Well, it kind of leads to the next question, which is then what's harder, leading at work or leading at home?
I think it probably ebbs and flows, right? And everybody's situation is a little bit different, right? If you have a team that's extremely dysfunctional or hard, you know, those situations can be really tough. I was with an executive last week that was in one of my sessions, and she literally broke down in tears talking about how she has one or two people on her team that just make her life so difficult, right? Just so they're just negative and it's miserable. But I also know people who deal with that at home. You know, there's tough situations at home and you know, you don't feel connected. But I think there's a fundamental principle behind both of those. When we feel truly connected, whether it's with our family or with our team, when we're on the same page, when we feel like we're having an impact and having deeper conversations and making that connection, I think is when it's really working. And so I think that's what we're striving for, whether it's personal or professional.
Brilliant insight. I couldn't agree more with you. I've just been reading Bob Chapman's book about Everybody Matters. I don't know if you've heard about it, but
I have. I haven't read it yet. Is it good?
It's very good. It's his story of Barry Waymiller and his basically transformation from being a very financially driven executive very early in his career to then this overarching transformation to this idea that every single person matters and it's the people in the building. And he tells stories and stories and stories, and he actually relates it to parenting, which I think most people in the professional world really stiff arm. But his point is that at the end of the day, we really want the same things both for our kids and for our people, and that is for them to be, you know, to contribute to their long-term success and well-being. And so it was just an interesting perspective that usually gets stiff-armed in the professional world.
I'm with you. As a keynote speaker, I think I have some liberties in terms of what I bring in on stage. But I share a lot of stories about my kids and my family because it's a huge part of who I am. And I think I agree with that sentiment that, you know, people are people, and I think we're after the same thing. And I mean, the dynamics can be different, but the principles all still apply.
Yeah. Well, last question. What is the, who are some leaders you look up to? And let me go one step further. That is, if you had dinner with any, could have dinner with any three leaders, living or dead, who would those people be?
I think there's some of the iconic leaders that stand out, right? That I just think it would be cool to be in the same room as them, like a Martin Luther King or a Lincoln or some of those that, you know, you've read a ton about. And just their presence, I think, is inspiring. You know, their commitment, their dedication to changing the world, to me, is awesome. But I there's so many leaders, and several I've featured in different books that I'm impressed by. I'll give you a good example. There's now he's become a friend, but the CEO of First Watch Restaurants, based out of Florida, his name is Ken Pendry. He is about as good a guy as you can get. And what drew me to Ken more than anything was, as I was speaking, working with his leadership team, I've very rarely heard of a CEO that is as beloved as Ken Pendry. His people just loved him. And so I was just like, well, I got to meet this guy. You know, I just wanted to see what he was all about. And just as genuine, as good a person as you can get. The only people that seem to have any struggle with him are his assistants and office staff, because they can rarely get him into the office. He's always in their restaurants. He's always with his people. He knows his people well. He has great relationships. As I sat down with him, I asked him, I said, okay, Ken, so as CEO, what's your role? And he said, I think my role is to build relationships with my people and to show them what it means to live the values of First Watch. Think about that. from a CEO's perspective, right? I mean, I could sit down with so many CEOs and say, what's your role? And they'd say, you know, my role is to keep the P&L statement in line. You know, I mean, you can approach it so many different ways, right?
Most people would obviously say EBITDA or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many pieces to that. But just the kind of leaders that really walk their talk, that are making an impact in their small part of the world, those people fascinate me. I just like being around them because they make me want to be better. Mm-hmm. They emulate so many of the things that, you know, I try and share, and I love to see it in action. So there's a lot of leaders that I could name that nobody's heard of, you know, that are just great leaders that are just making an impact in their organization. Ken's one who comes to mind. He's just an incredible individual.
Well, it's another example that sometimes it's the people that most people don't know about that they can relate most to, because sometimes when you hear of a Martin Luther King or you hear of an Abraham Lincoln, you think, well, he's different. It's like a saint or something, right? I mean, not everybody can be a saint, but then when you hear of someone that probably normal, that isn't in this iconic feature of figure, it probably provides, at least for me, the thought that it's possible. I mean, why not me, right? Why not you? So
I get to share the stage next month. I'm speaking in an event with Martin Luther King III, so Martin Luther King Jr.'s son. I'm excited to meet him just to see how that. And he, in his own right, has been an incredible figure, a great philanthropist, a great advocate for all that his father stood for. But yeah, I'm excited to, you know, see generationally, what does that create?
Well, right? We had Tom Ziegler on a couple weeks ago. And I had a similar interest just to see what kind of man he was.
And Tom's a great, great guy.
He's fantastic. I mean, he is just a wonderful man and taught so many great lessons. But Ty, we are smarter for you coming on the show. We appreciate you taking the time. And where can people find you?
My website's just tybennett.com, my name, tybennett.com, where you can find me on social media platforms or wherever under the same name.
Well, thanks, Ty. We'll make sure to link people to the right places, and certainly the book in the show notes. And again, we really appreciate you sharing such great insight today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. It's a great pleasure and honor to bring you stories and best practices to help you on your leadership journey. As always, it would mean a great deal to us if you would share this with your social networks or with your friends. The best way that you can help us is to spread our word and help us reach more people, which is our ultimate goal with this show. As always, you can follow me on social media at John G. Eads. You can give us feedback on the show, ways for we can improve. And if you'd leave a rating and review wherever you listen to the podcast, it would mean a great deal to us. We get a chance to look at every single one of them. Until next time, hope you're a great leader at home and at work.